Blog Talk Radio.
When life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes. So write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it is a Wednesday night here in the bluegrass of Central Kentucky. And tonight, both of your hosts tonight are in Central Kentucky, Lexington, to be specific, for episode number 335. And this is Stephen Zimmer, and joining me tonight is the lovely, the vivacious, the wondrous Holly Phillippe. Holly, there you are.
Hello, hello, hello.
She's excited, yeah, because we have a great guest for you tonight. And well, Holly had a trip to the chiropractor today, so she's going to be a little sore tonight. But her voice is working fine, so don't worry, folks. But she's laid up today a little bit, but the show is going on.
The show must go on.
Yes, yes, and definitely want to send a shout out to those of you listening in the Florida area. Yeah, I know it's a very rough day. You're in our thoughts and prayers here. And yeah, I know it's a rough time with the hurricane hitting. And I hope everybody's staying safe. And yeah, I know it's crazy images. Yeah, I saw even video images of sharks in the street in Fort Myers. And yeah, crazy stuff. But but yeah, I know it's not the usual
shark
time down there.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
There could be a Sharknado. It's plausible.
But,
it's crazy.
But yeah, it's I know it's not the best of times. So hang in there, and I hope you get through it smoothly and get power and all kinds of things restored very soon. And to everybody, I know that's a state that's got experience, and I know they had a lot of folks on standby and ready. So hopefully they can get things addressed, but I know it's still going to be a rough time. So, yeah, we're definitely Star Chamber Show. We've got you at heart. And tonight we're going to have a very upbeat show. And so bring some cheer to everyone and bring a fantastic guest on here in a few minutes. And looking in the chat room, we have, we do have Sandy Lender, and she still has power. Yeah, Sandy is in Florida.
Oh,
yeah, she
my God, I'm trying to get in.
She's in the hurricane zone, and
we can get live hurricane updates.
Yeah, she had bunkered down, and she has, her birds, of course, as you all know from following the show, and so she's got them all safe and protected. But yeah, she's right in the path of the storm, and but she still has power. This is fantastic news, so she probably is going to lose power tonight, according to the experts. But life is okay right now. And she's got all of her chickens in the garage, so she moved them indoors from the coop outside. So good job,
safe.
Sandy. Sandy Lender. Yeah, she is awesome. And Amy McCorkle, our wonderful friend and author, filmmaker, is in the chat room as well. And Holly's in the chat room, so yeah, it's already building up in there. So go have some fun if you can log in and chat and drop us some comments for the guest, and always a good time in the chat room. But not a whole lot of news today. Last week has been very busy, but we haven't got a whole lot new to announce other than that on the convention side of things, we do have AdSpace has opened up for next year's program for Imaginarium 2023. We do have AdSpace available now, a limited amount, and it's first come, first serve basis, and that's available. And so that's one of the newest things. And then I think it's going to happen Friday, we're going to start unveiling panelists and spotlighted guests And I just want to make sure that we're all got all of our ducks in a row to start rolling out all of them. A lot of new faces, a lot of faces you'll recognize. Fantastic group in the first wave, and it's a off to a racing start. And yeah, still not even October yet. So yeah, that's a very good thing. And look out for that on about Friday. So yeah, I don't know if Holly has any updates on convention stuff before we proceed. Anything new on your end, Holly?
I've got some really cool guests I've been vetting, and that are coming aboard. We'll start announcing guest panelists very soon, so people can kind of look over and get to know the new faces, and some really cool workshops. I've already got like 6 workshops scheduled. I mean, it's insane that I'm starting this early, but it's the 10th anniversary, and we've grown, and it's good. But it's going to be a heck of a year. If you've not been in a couple years or whatever, you definitely don't want to miss this year.
No.
If you're a regular attendee, you definitely don't want to miss this year. Every year we try to step it up a notch, and so far so good. But I really want to go all out this year.
Yep, it's going to be a good one. And we're going to start listing some of the workshops and programming early this year, just so people can get a really advanced look at it, especially newer folks. And so, I know that the workshops Holly just mentioned, and then, not all, but a core group of panels and stuff. We'll start getting some of that on the site pretty soon so that you can get an early look at a portion of the programming. Of course, it's a lot, and it won't be done until finished. We won't have the final list until, even a few months into next year. So, but at least you'll get a sneak peek at a chunk of it. And we'll definitely get that up there. And it looks like Metalbeck Harrison has entered the chat room. So, yes,
hello, good to see
Metalbeck.
I do have, Steve, I do want to mention one workshop that I actually added this week, because our guest tonight, I'm not going to say who it is yet, but our guest tonight is a certified kitty.
Expert.
And she goes to cat shows all the time. Yes, she's a behavioral specialist. A feline behavioral specialist. I added a workshop that's called Creating Authentic Animal Characters, and Babette Dijon is a new guest that you'll get to know, and I'll read you the little explanation of it here. I combine my skills as a writer and an animal communicator, she's also an animal communicator, to teach participants how to write animal characters that aren't just cardboard cutouts. Animal characters can enliven the senses, provide comic relief, and create intrigue plot opportunities for the human characters. But don't stop there. Animals experience the same life themes as human protagonists. The struggle to belong, the desire for love and companionship, the pain of betrayal, and the hard work of learning to trust and love again. Learn how to integrate an animal character's heroic journey into your book's plot and gain experience in writing from an animal's POV. It's going to be 90 minutes.
Awesome.
I think it's going to be really cool. Yes.
Yeah, as somebody that often has animal characters in my own work, that's one I highly recommend for folks to attend, and I'd like to see some of the insights that our presenter has, and like you said, it's a new brand new guest, and I believe she is a romance writer, I think, if I read the application.
She's
right.
Also doing a panel called Let's Talk About Writing Sex.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Those are always popular. Yeah, well attended.
I told her we'd do an evening one. I said that way you don't have to worry about going over in time, and y'all can sit there and just have fun. So.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Sandy's parrot wrote a book. Yeah, we should remind you all. Sandy Linder's parrot. Thank you, Sandy, for nudging us in the chat room there on that. And that is cool. That is cool. And so we got to look. It looks like Amy has to dive out. Working on her film festival tonight. And, actually, there are a couple more days to get in on early discounts entries for Imaginarium Film Festival. That's I'll mention that. Those actually run to the 30th at the Film Freeway and International Screenwriters Association, so you can get in entries in on a discount through Friday, and that's still available. Of course, the early bird discounts have passed on the vendor space and event tickets, but you should still get them. You should still get them if you want to come and exhibit at the event. And tonight's show is brought to you by two of our absolute favorites, longtime supporters of the show, Sandy Lender, the genre blender, and Ren Garcia. Ren Garcia, and yeah, it's always fun to have Ren spot on with the famous question, at least on our show. But we'll lead with his for a change, and then we'll give you a little bit about Sandy. So here's Ren.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes.
Yes, Ren Garcia, we are just weird enough for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, we wouldn't let you down. We're definitely weird enough. Thank you, Ren. And check out his League of Elders series. Fantastic, fantastic speculative fiction series with great cover work. Yeah, just stupendous artwork on those. And now we're going to go over and give you a little bit from Sandy Lender. So, yeah, hold on, folks. Yeah, give her your attention because she's got some great stuff to tell you about.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender Blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay. But watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Sandy. And, she did put in, as far as the book that we mentioned earlier that was written by her parrot, the title of that book is How to Train Your Human, A Guide for Parrots by Petrie Lender. And it won an Indie Book Award, so it's an award-winning book as well. And, of course, Sandy has a shelf full of awards. Yeah, she's won many. So, but let's see, looking down on her notes here and seeing if we got anything to report to you in the chat room. And, Sandy also wanted to mention that the book in the ad spot right there, that Summer Vampire book, has a big old hurricane in it. So, yeah, I guess you could say it's timely.
What about that?
There you go. That's from Sandy.
Sandy can give
right
us
now.
The play-by-play.
Yeah, Sandy can give us, like, updates as the show goes on because she's literally in the middle of the hurricane as we speak.
Like
and in
those,
the chat
like
room
those
somehow.
Meteorologists.
Yeah, Sandy's
– I want you to know,
the guy you
Sandy.
Like, Cantori? What's the guy's name, Cantori,
yes.
That guy that you like?
Jim Cantori, the coach. I call him the coach.
Yeah.
Play-by-play. But I've been watching all day long. The TV has been on all day to live, news.
It has.
Watching the
can
hurricane.
Confirm. Yeah, we've had the
I've
that
been
going
watching
through the house all day long. Yeah, so
this
hurricane
is a
update.
Weather nerd. That it's a weather nerd's thing. So
yeah,
when there's big hurricanes, I got to watch the play-by-play. I just hate it. It's sad though. So many people. Before I even left, I know it's deteriorated. It works, but before I went to the contractor, there was houses floating. There's a shark in people's yards, and I don't know what all. But it's don't pet the alligators, Sandy. I don't care if they look sweet and nice. Do not pet the alligators.
Or the pythons, or the sharks, or the bears, or the panthers. Even though I like kitties, these aren't the kitties you necessarily want to walk up to. Yes, stay away from that stuff.
Oh God,
Sandy.
She said Jim.
Yeah,
Jim got
hit in the
head
by
a palm tree today.
Yeah, I shouldn't chuckle, but I am a little bit because Holly showed me many clips, and he does all kinds of crazy stuff, and he's always in the middle of these gale force winds, and stuff's bouncing off of him, and his hat's always blowing away, and I mean, yeah, he gets in the thick of it. Yeah, that sounds like it's par for the course for old Jim. Yeah, that's too funny. But yes, tonight we have a fantastic guest. And are you ready, Holly? Are you ready? Because our guest is in queue. And tonight's guest is returning to the Star Chamber Show and is also an Imaginarium alumnus. Our guest is also, in addition to being an award-winning author, is also a writing coach and professional speaker. Her published works include two series, The Kingdoms of Chartiel, YA Epic Fantasy, and The Silver Fox Mysteries, Magical Cozy Mystery. And tonight, she will also be getting into the great work that she does and her passion for cats, including rescue and fostering. And I think you know who it is tonight. We have the one, the only, the absolutely amazing Cassandra Morgan. Welcome to the show. Your mic is on. Yay!
Hey, guys. Yay. Thank you for having me again.
Well, welcome back.
Hello. We haven't chatted in a while. And
I know.
I wanted to let everybody know you've seen her beautiful face many times because she is my right hand, her and her lovely husband. Is my right hand at Imaginarium. So there you go.
Yep. And got all kinds of stuff to talk about tonight. I'm excited. Looking forward to it. And Vicky and Albie, I just want to let you know, they're listening to the show as we speak. So they're
oh, good. That was going to be my first question. I had to know how my God for children were doing.
they're doing good.
They love hearing their godmother. So, yes, they are listening in. They're prowling around here.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah, they just got a new tunnel a couple days ago, so they're in real good spirits and bounding around everywhere. So, but, yeah, they're listening to the show. They're sticking near us tonight because they knew you were on, I think. They figured it out. They overheard us. But welcome. Yeah, tell us how are things going?
Because you've
got your hands in a lot of things.
You just got back from a convention.
I did, yes. So this last weekend I was at the Cincy Comic Expo in Cincinnati. That's why my voice might sound a little bit raspy or a little bit weak right now because I spent 3 days trying to hawk my dead trees to people. So... I got some good sales. It was a great show. It's always a fantastic time going to the Cincinnati Comic Expo. So if you're in the area, would definitely recommend checking it out for next year because I will for sure be there. And then I also, the highlight of my day is I got to meet John Noble. You probably know him from The Fringe, or he played Lord Denethor in the Lord of the Rings movies. So I missed out a couple of years ago on getting Bernard Hill's autograph and who played Théoden in the Lord of the Rings. I'm a big Tolkien nerd. When I was in middle school, I wanted to be a Tolkien linguistics historian scholar. So big Tolkien nerd.
So when I saw that
John Noble was coming to Cincy, I was like, that's it. I'm going to get it. I'm going to start collecting the cast autographs. I'm just going to do it. So I did. I got to meet him. I got to shake his hand. He was a lovely, lovely man.
That's awesome.
Well, we need to work on getting one of them then that you don't have to Imaginarium. See, then we can hit two birds with one
stone. Work on filling the gaps. Yeah, maybe get Peter Jackson.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, all right.
That would be fun.
Heck yeah.
But Denethor, yeah, he's a great character. Did it very well. And that was exciting.
It was a little bit strange, I'll admit, because when you fall in love with a character so much, it can sometimes be difficult to separate the character from the actor. And the one thing that it threw me off, but at the same time helped me, was Mr. Noble has an Australian accent. He's actually from Australia. That kind of helped a little bit not to make him sound like Denethor as much.
Right. Yeah, get a little separation there. So did he look to be in good health and all, too?
I think so. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, he's certainly getting up there. He's lived a long and wonderful life, and I'm seeing him do more in voice acting lately. So that's actually been very nice to see that he is still able to contribute to the entertainment industry, even if he's no longer able to do stunts like rolling across the hoods of cars and things like that anymore. So he's actually a voice actor for one of my favorite shows right now. It is called Star Trek Prodigy. So it's actually a Star Trek animated series, and it's aimed at kids. So if you have kids and maybe like Star Trek, TNG, like it's a little bit too soap opera-y or it's a little too old for them, but you want to get them into Star Trek, Prodigy is a great way to do that. My husband and I, we don't have kids, and we sit on the couch and watch it and absolutely love it. And Mr. Noble, he voices one of the villains in the show, and he does a chef's kiss job, of course.
Nice. Well, Holly's a big Trekkie. Holly should check
yes.
that out.
Yeah, I haven't even watched that, so I'm going to have to watch that now.
Yeah,
check that out.
Big with you.
What channel? What's it on?
I think Nickelodeon. I'll be honest. We download all of our shows, and I am not the tech person, so I just tell my husband, I'm like, Wayne, I wanna watch this show, and then like a few days later, it just all of a sudden shows up.
Check with Wayne.
Wayne's
check
good
with Wayne.
Yeah, he's good at that stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
He just makes things happen.
Yeah, he's magic. He's like a wizard.
He is.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, what's up with the kitty world? And tell people about your mouse tax.
Okay. So that's kind of two separate things. So thing number one in the cat world is I am now the president of the cat writers. That is writing as with, you know, a pen or a computer, not writing as with saddles and bridles. We are the Cat Writers Association, and we are an international organization. We are a membership full of amazing writers, from fiction writers and authors all the way to bloggers and artists and cat product reviewers, and our conference is coming up in just a few weeks. I think I looked and the countdown was like 16 days. We have 16 days until the conference.
Oh, wow.
So tickets are on sale. I'll do my little shameless plug right now. Are on sale for the conference at catwriters.com. It's $59 for Cat Writers members, $69 for non-members, and it is virtual, you guys. And here's the other cool thing is you will have access to the platform and watch the sessions for 30 days after the conference has ended. So let's say that you really wanted to see session A that was at 6 o'clock, but you ended up going to session B instead, that's not a problem. You can go ahead and log back in a week later, and you can watch session A. You can watch session A as many times as you want, as often as you want, whenever you want. So it's a fantastic deal. We have USA Today bestselling author Lydia Scherer as our keynote speaker, and I have all kinds of cat behaviorists and registered veterinary technicians and publishers and writers and artists that are there giving amazing presentations and content. So that's my shameless plug for the Cat Writers Association. Please go check it out. You have until September 30th to purchase your tickets. And if it is before the conference, but it is after September 30th, and you still want to get in, email me. I will get you in.
Awesome. Fantastic. I mean, I have an idea, Holly. I think she ought to run with the cat rider idea, too, and enter the convention riding a Siberian tiger, Cassandra on a Siberian tiger. That would be epic. That would be a perfect way to start the convention.
You don't have to write about cats. I wanted to make sure it's clarified. You don't have to write about cats to attend this conference, correct?
That is absolutely correct. To attend the conference, you don't even have to have anything published. You can just attend because you enjoy cats, you want to learn things about cats, and or maybe you want to take advantage of some of the other programming that we have. We're going to be talking about publishing, self-publishing versus traditional, which one is right for you. We have a publisher, Jay Hartman of Untreed Reads. He is going to be talking about distribution. And distributing your books wide versus just solely on Amazon, and what are the advantages and disadvantages of that. So we have a plethora of stuff for both cat lovers as well as writers.
That's fantastic. I'll have to get Albert is trying to speak, and I'm not joking even. Once he gets to learning words, we'll have to get him to be a guest speaker for you next time, next year maybe. We'll get him to say enough words.
Well, Steve, Steve, you could actually be in a Cat Writers Association because, well, you are part lion, you're a were-lion, and the fact that your book, Dream of the Navigator, and that whole series, it has cats. You have cat characters in your book.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's cats that play a prominent role all throughout, a lot of Raiden Valkyrie adventures, and, yeah, cats appear all over the place in my work. The Harvey and Solomon steampunk stories. One of the characters was a cat in the steampunk short stories I did. Oh yeah, I got a lot of cats. And the Faraway Saga has several. Faraway Saga actually has all of the cats that are part of my life. You know, going from the past to the present, they're all in there. So I need to get out of my tunnel and join the organization.
We got to get edited, but the new one will have Vicki now be in it. So,
yes, they are in it. I can confirm.
Well, I might be able to get a good word in, you know, with some of the people that are higher up.
Yeah, all right. You got to know people, you know. Got to kind of know people. We know
I'm just
people.
The president.
Wink,
that's
wink,
awesome.
Nudge. Yeah.
Yeah, Sandy's letting everybody know that she's got a cat character in the Choices trilogy, because it has fur the color of Carissa's hair, and that is important. So yeah, she's got a cat hidden in the Choices trilogy as well. So yeah, Sandy's speaking up in the chat room. Yep. So there we go.
Everybody wants be a cat.
Yeah, most definitely. But you've
could
adopted
I hear
one
you guys
recently.
Had asked? Yeah, I was going to ask. I think you guys had asked about mouse tax. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. I want to talk.
Yes.
I want you to talk about mouse tax. I don't think Stephen has knows about this, but I do comment on your stuff, and you know I always like it and everything. And I wanted you to tell everybody a little bit about mouse tax.
Okay, so back in April, I received a phone call from a friend who is the director of a shelter. Now, I'm taking a little bit of a break from fostering. I've been taking a break for a while. I have a lot going on. But my friend contacted me knowing that I am a feline nutritionist. And she said, will you please take this kitten? His best chance of living is going to be with you. This poor kitten. He was 6 weeks old when I got him. He had been intentionally starved for 2 weeks, at 6 weeks old, he should have weighed around 1.3 to 1.5 pounds. And this poor little guy weighed 11 ounces when I got him. Because of my background in feline nutrition, I was really able to hone in on the specific nutrients that he needed and really custom make his meals for him. And now, as he is sitting in front of me, he is about 6 months old, just shy of six-ish months old, and he weighs 8.5 pounds, and he is not fat.
Nice.
He is a big cat. So when I was still fostering him, he is now a foster fail. That's a story for another day. When I was still fostering him, one of my things that I do to get my fosters adopted is I plaster them all over my social media and guilt people into wanting to adopt them. I came up with this thing called mouse tacks, because I had people literally messaging me going, where is my mouse picture for the day? You haven't shared a picture of mouse yet. And so I came up with this thing of like, I'm sorry, here, I'm paying the mouse tax. And so now he's kind of become a little famous in our area. He's leash and harness trained, and he'll go to some of the stores with me. And he actually has a fan group on Facebook if you want to follow him. It is Fans of Mighty Mouse the Cat. And if you happen to meet Mouse out and about on his travels and you take a picture of him, you're very welcome to post it on your regular social media or, of course, in our fan group. And we just ask that you put the words Mouse Tax on your picture.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah, I'm a member. I'm a member of that group, too. So that's awesome. Yeah,
that is awesome. I'm just so happy that they contacted you, because you do the raw diets. And I know not everybody understands what that entails. That don't mean you go to the refrigerated pet section at Walmart and you buy the tubes of processed food. You and Wayne actually make the food yourselves, correct?
That's correct. So what I tell people is an unbalanced raw diet can be more dangerous than the cheapest commercial diet. So you really do need to educate yourself before you decide to go down that path. And through my other certifications and connections, I actually have two certifications, one from Hill's Science Diet and then one from Purina. And then I also attend, through some of my connections in the cat world, Royal Canin occasionally will put on educational seminars as well. So I am staying up to date on what the commercial food industry is doing as well, but I also have certifications in the raw diet. And it is very specific. It is based on weight. You have to know what all of the different organs provide. You have to know at what percentage you need to have your liver and your kidney and pancreas and all these different things. And should you give the pancreas to this cat, or should you not give the pancreas to this cat based on what kind of medical needs that they have? So it can be incredibly complicated. So it is certainly not for everybody. But yes, I go down to the Middle Eastern market and sometimes to the Chinese market, and I buy all of the different organs that I need, and I cut them up and I portion them all out and get my various different muscle meats and my bones and weigh everything out specific for each cat two times a day.
Yeah, there is a lot to it. And like you said, you can't be willy-nilly about it. You've got to know what you're doing. When you're handling raw meat, it's just like, you know, you can't throw raw chicken and rub it all over your counters and all that. You know, you've got you got to be clean, you got to know what you're doing, how you handle them, you know, and what they need and what they don't. And a lot of people, you know, get confused because I know a lot of the cat foods now that are over the, you know, over the counter, which you can just buy at Walmart or wherever, has greens in it and vegetables. And cats are meat eaters. They really don't need that stuff. Now, maybe it can aid. Do you think there is a need for any of that, or they strictly just can, you know, do just fine on meat?
So cats are what are called obligate carnivores, and that means that they absolutely must have meat in their diet in order to survive. Now, we as humans have been selectively breeding dogs for thousands of years, right? And that's how we are able to have such a wide variety of different breeds, right? Well, there is actually more genetic difference between a boxer and a pit bull than there is between a sphinx cat and a Maine Coon cat, okay? And there's more genetic difference between the pit bull and the boxer than there is Mighty Mouse sitting in front of me and a tiger that is currently sleeping in a jungle over in Africa. So we have only been selectively breeding cats for maybe a little over 100 years. That means that they still very much have a biological makeup about them as nature intended. And when we start to look at, well, what do cats eat in nature? They're eating meat. And the only non-meat food that cats are getting in the wild, whether it's a lion, a tiger, or that annoying tomcat that the lady next door keeps feeding all the time, is the only non-meat that they eat is what is found in the stomachs of their prey, and that's already partially digested. And a lot of times they will leave the stomachs. They don't always eat the stomachs. So bearing that in mind, cats also do not have the ability to break down things like fruits and vegetables and grains and pull the nutrients out of them. So yes, their bodies can literally physically break it down, but on a chemical level, they're not actually extracting any kind of nutrients out of there. So when you're seeing things like, you know, cranberries for urinary health and stuff like that, that's not really helping them. If you can eliminate as many of those vegetables and fruits and grains from their diet as possible, that's actually going to allow their digestion to do what it needs to do and focus on pulling out the nutrients so that they can be healthy, as opposed to spending all of this time breaking down nutrients in order to pass through their system that they're not really getting any kind of benefit out of in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And
I thought this was a writing show.
Oh, we cover everything.
We talk about everything. And the fact that the kitties, this helps people write about kitties, right? You got to do your research. Mm-hmm. You got to be educated to be able to write about your kitties. And saying not all, but most are animal lovers of some sort. Sandy has her birdies, you know. We all have our cats, but yeah, they're usually a creative love animals in some form, whether it's dogs, cats, birds, ferrets, whatever. I plan on getting an oxalotl. Steven keeps teasing me and saying that Albert's going to get a treat. And I said, no, you're not feeding the oxalotl to Albert, but no, I want an oxalotl. Something awful, but yeah.
I love those things. They're so cute. So yeah, I'm a cat person, but originally when I was in school working on some of my certifications, I actually they're long expired now, but I had certifications in dog training and dog agility too. So I like to consider myself more of an animal person. But my husband, Wayne, for sure, is very much a cat person. He is very proud cat dad. And he is not ashamed of that at all.
That's awesome.
No,
hey, you made a point about writing, though, and this applies to speculative fiction. Sandy brings up a good point in the chat room, but we talked about, you know, cat diets and you know, the intricacies of that and thinking about their diet and what they absolutely need and things. But this helps people write about dragons. She has a baby dragon in an upcoming novel who's starving when he's born. But how do the humans feed this thing? And so she's saying that, you know, you go into the same process of thinking, you know, in terms of the, you know, detail about how to feed a dragon that you, you know, might, you know, think about when you're, you know, talking about a cat raw diet. And so that's cool. That's a great example of applying that. But yeah.
Yeah. And really for any kind of animal, especially one, any kind of fantasy animal, I should say, obviously, you know, we don't really know what the diet of a dragon or a centaur, you know, whatever would be. So find the closest animal to that, research what they would eat, and then maybe put a little bit of a twist on it. And your twist can also come in the form of, in your world, in the world building, where are they located? Uh-huh. Where is the species located geographically? What is the weather like there? What kind of weather patterns are there? What sort of migration are you seeing there? And then you can incorporate that into their diet as well.
Absolutely.
It's something people don't think about at first, you know, especially newer writers, because they'll be like, I'm going to make this great creature. But then as they're writing, they go like, oh, well, what would this creature eat? How would this creature sleep? You know, what's the environment? Yeah, you have to think about all these things. You know, what food sources are local to that, you know, area that it could eat? You know, or that may be only found in that part of the world, whatever your fantasy world is. You know, maybe that little part that animal lives in, that's the only place it's found, and that's what they you know, sustain on. That's what they live on. If they would be pulled out of that area, they could not live, you know. So they have to stay in that area, so they cannot migrate or whatever. But, yeah, there's a lot more to it than what people just think, oh, I'm just going to sit down and write an animal. You know, you've got to think about these things.
And you can make it fun. Sandy just chimed in and said she has defined it for her world, for the dragons, and it's so gross, so fabulously gross. That's quoted her, what she said. So that intrigues me. I actually know what she's talking about, but yeah, you'll have to read her books to find out.
Yes, definitely read Sandy's book. Sandy is a fantastic author. But the other thing, too, is make sure that it is relevant to the story that you're telling as well. If the animal's diet and, like, there's this big, full explanation of it, has nothing to do with your plot, and it has nothing to do with any kind of character building moments for either that dragon character or somebody that the dragon interacts with, then you don't need to tell, you know, the whole entire thing. Like, how many people have looked up on the internet a recipe, right? And they click on it and it's somebody's blog and you have to scroll all the way down to the bottom to just read the recipe, right? You're like, that's all I came for, right? That doesn't mean that the other stuff isn't interesting, right? But it's like, that's not what I came here for. That's, you know, don't lose that. You can still write it and then put it in another document and then you can use it for all kinds of marketing stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Ooh, that's a good idea, too. Very good idea.
Yeah, just reminded me, Holly, you'll appreciate this, but just reminded me that in our D&D group, my tiefling character rescued a Smilodon cub and has been raising it. So yes, my feeding the Smilodon baby has been a challenge. It applies all over.
That's true.
Yes. But don't worry, Cassandra. When my Smilodon is fully trained and full size, I'll bring him to meet you.
Yeah,
your first saber-toothed tiger. But
you'll have to train it so that I can write it into my next con, right?
Yes, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, if they can. Yeah, if we can't pull off a Siberian tiger, maybe a Smilodon. That'll be awesome. Yeah, both are big enough to carry a person, so those would work. But yes, let's get into the thick of the writing. You have so many good works. What are you currently emphasizing? What are you currently working on? Tell us a little bit about what's happening with you writing-wise right now. We'll get into that.
So I haven't been writing for quite a while. I went through an unfortunate stint with depression. I had surgery in March of 2020, which was right around the time that the world got shut down and that really affected me. And so I wasn't writing for a really long time. And it's only been recently that I've started getting back into things. Now, being the president of the Cat Writers Association, that is taking a significant amount of my time. So I'm very slowly getting back into things. And I have three or four different works that I kind of have all going on at the same time. One of them is a middle grade fantasy called Molly Mipps and the Magical Menagerie. Then I have a gothic fairy tale horror. I initially wrote this as a short story, which was in an anthology, and I received my rights back to it a couple of years ago, and I'm working on expanding it more into novel format as opposed to short story. I'm working on book three of the Cartile series, which is the young adult fantasy. Those books take an incredibly long time. There is so much detailed world building and research that goes into those. It's not uncommon for those books to take like 3 years start to finish, from the time that I do my outline to the time that I've hit the publish button on them. My last project, and this is the one that I'm putting more emphasis on right now, is the fourth book in my magical cozy mystery series. So this is a series about a secret society of elder spies that travel the world neutralizing magical artifacts. Each book takes place in a different country, and it centers on cat myth, cat lore, or cat history from that country. And book four is taking place in Jamaica. And I work with people who live in those countries and speak the languages. And I had found someone that was my Jamaican consultant. And then the pandemic happened, and especially the Black Lives Matter movement happened. And I decided, you know what, I think I'm going to take a step back from this for a little while. But now I do have a lot of people that are saying, hey, when is book four coming out? When is book four coming out? So I have had to find a new Jamaican consultant to help me make sure I'm getting things correct. And that just recently happened. So I am putting the finishing touches on the outline for the fourth book in the Dorothy Clace series, the Silver Fox Mysteries, and then I will send that outline. It's a pretty detailed outline. It's almost like the Cliff Notes version, where, you know, there's all those different like bullet points of what happens. I will send that to my consultant, and I'll say, okay, tell me where I screwed up. Tell me what it is that I did wrong, and then we'll have a discussion about how to fix it. That's kind of what I have going on right now.
Cool. Well, I think you need to go to Jamaica and just call it research for your book, and then you can write it off on your taxes.
That's what everybody keeps telling me, but I have way too much Irish in my blood. I have two colors, Stephen. Okay, I have vampire and lobster. Okay, me and the sun do not get along.
Oh, dear.
Me too.
Yeah, Holly's kind of that way,
real.
Too. Yeah, she knows it.
Yeah,
but
unfortunately,
awesome.
I'm not blessed with any kind of brown skin. I am white as the snow, and, yeah, the sun turns me red, and the rest of the time, yeah, I'm snow. So, yeah, I was not blessed with tan skin.
Yeah.
Sorry. I wish I were.
Have,
I'd like to be, but, you know, it's just the way the cookie crumbled.
Yeah, I've actually burned slightly through my clothes before.
Oh, my
me
God.
Too.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially when I've been on boats out in the water, I know I'm going to fry, and I will load up on stuff. I will put, like, long sleeves on, thin long sleeves, wear pants. I know not to wear shorts. I did it one time and ended up with, like, third degree on my legs. I had blisters, open areas. I mean, it was bad for a while.
Yeah.
And so I learned my lesson to wear pants, wear long, and I have still burnt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not as severe, but it's still there.
It hurts.
Well.
And, it's still uncomfortable. And, you know, it's not as bad as, you know, being in the shorts. But, yeah, it's still uncomfortable.
Well, I have good news for you, Cassandra. Becca Harrison has just said in the chat room that since she does have some darker skin, she will go do the research for you in person.
There you go.
So She'll go to Jamaica for you. Do you have a volunteer?
That's great.
Send the daughter-in-law. She's my daughter-in-law. Send the daughter-in-law.
She's awesome. She's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, but I believe, she has, she's like me. She has some indigenous American blood. So, yeah, we can handle the sun a little bit better.
She's the mom of the three oldest grandkids, Cassandra. You know that helped us at Imaginarium last year.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Branson and Bentley and all. Yeah, she's their mama. I had them boys running all over the place.
Yeah,
they're
I would have volunteered.
That
darn convention keeps me too busy, so I can't leave, right? Unfortunately. So I'll have to send Becca. But it sounds like you have a lot going on, and that is fantastic. I mean, it sounds like you're getting ready to hit the ground running with a lot of projects. What is your process? I mean, you're going to be working on each of these things kind of simultaneously, or what is your process for tackling, you know, all of that? Because you kind of outlined several things.
Yeah, so I'll admit that I sometimes will procrastinate working on one project by working on another. So if you're the kind of writer that can, I do suggest having a couple different projects going at the same time, because if you're completely stuck with one project, you can still be making forward momentum and writing something by working on another project. NaNoWriMo is coming up, and the first book in my Silver Fox Mystery Series was actually written completely start to finish, the rough draft, during NaNoWriMo. So I am thinking about doing the same thing for the fourth book in the Silver Fox Mystery Series, so that I can just really concentrate on getting that out to my fans, because they've been asking for that for a while. And then after that, I'll probably end up going back and forth between the third book in the Cartile series and the Gothic fairy tale horror. So I'm past the outlining stage for the third book, in the Cartile series, and I'm still outlining the Gothic fairy tale horror book. So that's what you're saying. If you can have your projects at different stages, that can also help too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit more about what the series is, are about, like a synopsis or a little blurb.
Yeah, both of them, yeah. Yeah, I'd love to get that out to the folks that are listening for the first time.
The Silver Fox Mysteries, that's the one that is about a secret society of elder spies that travel the world neutralizing magical artifacts. Each book takes place in a different country, and it centers on cat myth, cat lore, or cat history from that country. So far, we have been to France, Iceland, and Russia, specifically the St. Petersburg area of Russia. And then, like I said, book four is going to take place in Jamaica. There will be 9 books in that series because cats have 9 lives. And I have all of the different places planned out and set up. I can give you guys a little bit of a spoiler. So there's going to be a book that takes place in Salem, Massachusetts. There's going to be one that takes place in Japan. The last book in the series is going to take place in England. There's going to be one that takes place in South Africa. So I've got everything all planned out for that one.
Nice.
The Gothic fairy tale horror, that one is a prequel of how the witch from Hansel and Gretel came to be.
Cool.
I've seen a lot of people do the twisted fairy tales thing. I've seen, obviously, like Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, and specifically Hansel and Gretel with the brother and sister being like different types of monster hunters. That seems to be a pretty recurring sort of retelling of that. But I haven't seen anybody do the, well, how did the witch get into the predicament that she is? How did she come to be? So that's what it's called, The Witch of Eisenwald Forest. So that's what the Gothic fairy tale horror is. And then my young adult fantasy, it is very Lord of the Rings, Narnia-esque. The way that I was pitching it this weekend was it's got elves, dwarves, magic, battle for the throne. It is obnoxiously epic.
Yes.
Nice. Right up my alley.
So if you like Tolkien, you like that book.
Yes.
Well,
yes, very much. Tolkien, Narnia-esque, because it is a portal fantasy. So that means that there are people from one world that get transported to a different world. So, for example, Alice in Wonderland is a portal fantasy. And then a lot of the Narnia books where you have the Pevensey kids and Eustace and who's that girl that?
What, Susan and Lucy?
Yeah, there's a couple different groups, and I'm not placing all of them. But anyways, they all get to Narnia. So those are called portal fantasies. So the Cartile series is a portal fantasy, but also being an absolute hellacious Tolkien nerd, it does have a lot of like Tolkien-esque influences. To the point that I am working on companion novelettes to each book where every single character, every single place, every single god that is mentioned in each of the books gets an entry and an explanation and a backstory. And I've even written a couple of like nursery rhymes and fairy tales and mythologies specifically for the worlds of Cartile, and I'm compiling them into little novelettes. That way, if you read about a character in book 2 and you're like, oh, I want to know more about them, then you can go to the companion novelette for book 2, open it up, and then you can look the person up and read more about them.
So, Polly, soon we'll hear about Cassandra going to Oxford to do a sabbatical where she'll write her version of the Silmarillion. that'll be next.
Oh my gosh, no.
That'd be awesome.
Stephen, you are definitely going to have to read this book of hers. I mean, that's right up your alley. Stephen's favorite things in the world are Narnia and Tolkien.
Biggest influences are Lewis and Tolkien. That's my roots. So, yeah, and portal fantasies are always up my alley. So, yeah, that's why I have one too as well. So that's something I love. I love that, those kind of things. And our Sandy's going crazy about the prequel to Hansel and Gretel with the witch. She's definitely sold on that.
I want to hear about that. That's very cool. Very cool. That's,
yeah, some enthusiasm
I love
about
the whole
that. Well.
Story.
Yeah, that's
and the movie.
That's awesome.
So, are you watching? Well, this brings up this blows out of the water. Steve won't even watch it. He's so irritated.
I'm not going to. I'm going to recuse myself if you're going to ask her. I have to recuse myself.
Cassandra, are you watching The Lord of the Rings?
Yes, I am. So
yes.
Here's my opinion on it. Right. First of all,
okay.
They currently don't even make movies in the same way that they used to when the original trilogy came out, right? So trying to compare the TV series to what the trilogy that Peter Jackson had is like trying to compare the analogy that came to my mind, and it's probably not going to make sense else, but it's comparing a Persian cat from the 1950s to a Persian cat that we have today, and what if you look up pictures of like 1950s Persian cats, they didn't have nearly as much of a pushed in face, their legs were a little bit longer, their fur wasn't nearly as long as it is now, and it's because we've bred them to be that. But they really are almost a completely different animal. So first of all, we really can't compare the two to each other, right? Second of all, they have such limited material to be able to use because the Tolkien estate is being very specific on how they release things, what it is that they're releasing and giving rights to, et cetera, et cetera. And if anybody has ever read The Silmarillion, you know that there are moments where it is just so dry. It does not read like a traditional book, a traditional fiction book. It reads like a history book. This thing happened. This person said this. This person did that. There's not a lot of eloquent prose that goes into things. You know, you might be annoyed in Lord of the Rings that Tolkien took, you know, four paragraphs to describe a single tree, but then when you go to read The Silmarillion, then you're like, oh my gosh, I wish that he would describe this tree for four paragraphs. This is so boring, right? So they don't have a lot of material to work with. And I guess the other way that I look at it too is I saw the Aragon movie before I read the book. And so I loved the Aragon movie when it came out, and it inspired me to want to read the book. And when I read the book and then I compared the book to the movie, I went, oh, this is nothing alike. Like, no wonder people are completely up in arms about this. But I was able to separate the two and have an appreciation for what was created. It was still a good story that was inspired by the Aragon book.
Right.
And that's kind of how I'm looking at the Rings of Power is, to me, there's a difference between based on the works of Tolkien and inspired by the works of Tolkien, right? So in a way, it's almost similar to how we've created these twists on the fairy tales, right? So I'm putting my own twist on how the witch from Hansel and Gretel came to be, using some of the elements from the original fairy tale. So honestly, I am such a Tolkien nerd that you could put almost anything Tolkien in front of me, and I will absolutely love it. But that doesn't mean that it's not without its faults. I would probably rate it like a seven out of 10. It's good. I'm entertained. But there are parts of it that I wish they would have done differently. But those stem more from me being an author and me studying writing craft as opposed to actual Tolkien things itself. So, yes, I am watching The Rings of Power. I see where it is flawed. I understand why some people are upset. And I'm never going to try to force somebody to consume a piece of media that doesn't feel like it's right for them, and that's okay.
Right, right. Yeah, I watch it secretly when Stephen ain't around or when he's writing or whatnot. Because he just will not. He looks at it from the point of view. I'll explain it for you, Stephen. He looks at it from the point of view of being a author and like someone would take like a piece of his work and totally change, you know, the characters and things around and the story. And, you know, he said they should stay true to the character. But I told him, you know, it's not like it's based right off the book. It like you said, it's inspired by Tolkien.
Yeah.
It's not like Tolkien sit down and did the screenplay, you know.
Yeah, and the section of the Silmarillion which they are taking the majority of their inspiration from is so short. Like the Silmarillion tome is like literal inches thick. I mean, it's like thicker than a Bible. It's massively thick, and they're basically using the equivalent of one chapter from this book to take their inspiration from. And it's similar to what Peter Jackson did in the trilogy, where they gave the role of Glorfindel to Arwen, and then all of the scenes between Arwen and Aragorn throughout the entire trilogy, that was never in the books themselves. It was a very small section. I think it was a couple of paragraphs in the appendices at the end of The Return of the King. And even then they changed a little bit of it in the appendices. Elrond, who's Arwen's father, was not happy that she was marrying Aragorn. Basically when Aragorn was crowned king, Arwen and Elrond came to the ceremony, and then that night they like went out and stood on a hill and talked to each other, and that was the last that Arwen ever saw of her father because he did not agree with what she was doing. Now, if you watch the movie, you can see Elrond in the background smiling and clapping when Aragorn and Arwen kiss in The Return of the King. I mean, Peter Jackson even changed some of that. So when you're working with such limited source material, inspiration and liberties are going to have to be taken. And as long as you make an attempt to be respectful of the source material, I feel like they're trying. Are those the same choices that I would make? No. And that's just part of being a creative. But I can see where they're trying, and I have respect for the trying. And again, it's Tolkien. I'm just going to love it anyway.
No matter what. Well, that's kind of me and Anne Rice, okay? They're doing some things with Interviews the Vampire that, you know, it hasn't started yet. It's going to in the next, you know, couple weeks, but the Interview with the Vampire series on AMC. But I'm going to watch it. I don't agree with everything they're doing, but I am going to watch it because it was Anne Rice. She overseen the past few years of them casting and, you know, helping with the screenwriting and got Christopher's looking after it. So, I mean, she had a lot of input into this, being alive, she did. She had a lot of input, unlike Tolkien, because, you know, he's gone, so he doesn't. But she did. And so I'm going to give it a chance and watch it just because it was Anne Rice. and just because it's Interviews with a Vampire. But, you know, I might not agree with everything, but it's Anne Rice. So, you know. So I understand. I understand fully where you're coming from. You know? Yeah, because I'll watch anything it's based on any of her work. You know, I'm an Anne Rice nerd, like you and Stephen are Tolkien nerds. So, but yeah, there's some mixed opinions about the series, the Lord of the Rings series, and they get pretty heated, and you know, I understand it. I see all sides, but I mean, me, I've not read it. I know that's going to make you gasp. I've never read the series. I love to watch epic fantasy. I don't care to read epic fantasy. It's just too descriptive. It's just, it's, I don't know. It's just not my cup of tea.
I've got to convert
it's
you.
It's not my cup of tea.
You wait.
And Stephen's like, oh, my God, how dare you? You know, but it's just not my cup of tea.
I'm going to change you.
You know? Yeah, he swears he's going to change me with this new book and all, but we'll see. We'll see. I'm open-minded. You know, there's some, like, you know, I don't read romances. I read paranormal. I read vampire books. I read, you know, YA books, dystopian. You know, that's what I like for fun, you know, my personal reading time. But there is, like, Kathy Jackson, who, you know, everybody knows, you know, that's in our circle. She got me started on one of her series. I said, darn it, Kathy, I don't read romance, but I'll be darned if she didn't get me started. Now I'm hooked on one of her series. So, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm always open-minded.
That's my point.
You know? And I think it's good to step outside your normal reading material anyway, because that gives you a broader perspective.
Yeah, one of the things that kept me sane through the pandemic was I ended up writing a sweet, clean romance. I really don't even read romance. I have read some romance. There's a specific trilogy from Nora Roberts that I like, and like that's it. That is literally it. So romance is not my thing, but it was something that was so different, and the endorphins that it ended up releasing for doing research on like, oh, well, what are romantic gestures and, you know, names on like what are the most popular romantic names for men and, you know, different things like that. And that's part of what helped to keep me sane during the pandemic. So, yeah, I probably will never write another romance again. I'm very okay with that. Damsel in Social Distance was my pandemic baby. I'm very proud of it. But yeah, it is good to step outside the box every once in a while too, because if what can end up happening is when you read the same genre so much, you start to see patterns, and then you start to become hypercritical. And you know those old curmudgeon-y people that like, oh, this sci-fi this and this sci-fi thing that, and oh, well, this author did this back in 1979, you know, and you're like, dude, you are such a killjoy. Like, let me enjoy my thing. Why are you so mean? Well, that can actually happen to you if you don't step outside a little bit.
True. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So true.
I have several images running through my head of folks that are just like that.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. This Yes, back in 1964, this was published. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's great. Oh, man. That's cracked me up.
Hashtag not my sci-fi. Yeah.
I always advocate to write outside your genre once in a while, to kind of challenge yourself, because that's kind of how I ended up doing the Harvey Solomon steampunk stories, was Kimberly Richardson, the editor, had challenged me to, you know, write steampunk, and she knew I never had in the past, never. So she just thought it would be a good writing challenge for me, and it turned out to be really fun. So, yeah, you'll be surprised at what you discover. And you pick up new writing skills, because as you write in other genres, you pick up things intrinsic to those genres that can be used as elements in your fantasy or some of, you know, whatever your main genre is. So, yeah, you get more of a toolkit, in my view. And that's actually kind of why I had Imaginarium be like a cross-genre, all-genre event, the idea to, you know, bring together all the cooking elements into the chef's dominion there. So
that's kind of what ended up happening a little bit with my Silver Fox mystery series. Like it started out that somebody had tagged me in like this meme thing on Facebook, and then somebody was like, "Oh, Cassandra, you should write this." And so I'm like, "Eh, you know what? I will." But it is such a combination of so many things. So it's got cats. It's got world travel, it's got different cultures, it's got magical artifacts, it's got secret societies, and the main character is a woman that's in her 60s, a widow that's in her 60s. And, like, you never see that. So I didn't know how people were going to take it. Like, to this day, I still don't even know exactly what genre to put this book series in, because it's a culmination of so many things, but it is my best-selling series.
Nice. Nice. That's cool. But yeah, it's always cool to, you know, work in other genres and bring elements like that together. And so what I know, you know, you may not have exact dates yet or things like that, but what is your general projection on when your readers can roughly expect maybe some new stuff coming out? What's the ballpark right now?
So the at least one of the companion novelettes to the Cartile series should be out by January. I'm hoping to have the fourth book in the Silver Fox Mysteries out by March of 2023 at the extreme latest. And I would say the third book in the Cartile series will probably be out at the beginning of 2024.
Nice. Yeah, so you'll have some stuff on the map for release next couple of years for sure. That's good.
Yes.
That's good. Awesome. And so we're getting up about 13 minutes to go. So, Holly, what's the next topic we should make sure to cover with Cassandra, because she's so multifaceted? I don't want to miss any of the good stuff.
Well,
here.
Where are you going to be next that people could come buy your books and talk to you, check you out?
So I don't have a whole lot scheduled right now. If you're in the Toledo area, there is the Writer's Block Author Fair on October. Oh Lord, I'm going to kill myself. It is the week after the conference, so it is the weekend after October 15th, and I don't have a calendar in front of me to know what date that is. So if you're in Toledo, look up the Writer's Block Author Fair at the Franklin Park Westfield Mall. I will be at that. There is a con in Southfield, Michigan, called Confusion in January. I'll be at that. Of course, I will be at Imaginarium in July. Maybe I'll have Mouse with me. I don't know. I'm still
you
trying.
You should.
You should. Yeah. We'll have Albert and Vicky.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
He don't like. Huh? But I said Albert's scared of everything, so he would hide anyway.
Oh well, yeah. I know he's shy a little bit. But.
In April, April 23rd of next year, I will be again up in Southeast Michigan at PenguinCon. So that's currently what I have on my schedule right now.
Well, that's a pretty nice schedule. And let's see, the date you were talking about, I just happened to have a calendar up. It was I think October 22nd is a Saturday.
Yes.
It's the week after the 15th. So I guess that's the other one you were speaking of. And PangoCon
yes.
sounds so neat. I've talked to you and Wayne about that before, but that sounds like such an awesome
yeah.
convention. That's one that I hope we can pull off, you know, if all goes well for 2023.
Yeah, if you guys ever want to come, like, let us know. We'll get, like, a double suite, and, like, we'll share and have room parties all weekend long. So.
Nice.
That would be great.
Yeah, just no tequila for Holly. Other than that, you're safe. Oh, that's too
no
fun.
Tequila. I love going to conventions that I don't have mm-hmm. to run. It's so nice
yes.
because I don't have the stress. I can actually enjoy myself, talk to people, network, you know, and attend
yes.
panels. And do, I would love to attend all the panels at Imaginarium. I would love to,
mm-hmm.
but I can't. We're always doing other things. So, you know, might get to
yeah,
peek in
nice
once
to,
in a while.
Nice to go to PangoCon where
yeah,
we actually
I love
go.
To attend all the panels. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got to get back on the convention track. There's just been
yeah.
so much that's went on. Well, we lost 2 years of our life. We all did. And then, you know, we're trying to get back on the saddle. And then there's been so much that's happened this year. Well, since Imaginarium, there's been a lot that's happened. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've had a hurricane. It's
one of those
activity.
Things.
No, yeah.
Yeah, no matter if you're creative or not, life still happens too. So, yeah, just
yep.
want to tell people that, warn you, you know, you might sit down and be in a good writing groove and everything, and then, bam, something happens and throws
mm-hmm.
you off a little bit. But you got to get back on the horse, which you're doing,
yep.
Cassandra.
Which
I commend
you're
you. You're doing it.
Yep.
You're getting right back on that horse and getting back at it.
That tiger, you're riding the tiger back into battle again.
There you go.
Awesome.
Is that going to be my thing? Like is that my thing
yeah.
now? Do I have to come to Imaginarium now with like
a
giant stuffed tiger,
tiger
and just like wear it
yeah.
like I'm riding it all weekend now?
There you go.
I think something has been riding born.
The
this
tiger.
Is fantastic. Ride the tiger.
Riding in on the tiger. Well, if you are the president, you know, of the Cat Riders Association, so there you
uh-huh.
go. It all is coming full circle.
It is a line in one of my favorite heavy metal songs by Dio, Holy Diver. Yeah, Ride the Tiger. So, yeah, that has many applications. but yeah, that's good to hear that you're out and about again. That's fantastic. And I hope that you have you said that you had good sales in your recent convention visits. I hope that continues too. Yeah,
it'll be even better next year when I'll actually have new material as well. There were several people that walked by my table and they're like, oh, I bought those books last year, or oh, have you come out with the fourth book yet? So I've got my fans out there that are wanting new stuff. So that's quite motivating too.
Awesome. And I do want to make sure you get a chance to mention some of the stuff that you offer, because you know you are a writing coach, and are you currently taking on any new clients in that area? Or yeah, feel free to pitch that a little bit.
Unfortunately, I'm not taking on any clients right now. Everything that I have going on with the Cat Writers Association is
mm-hmm.
taking a lot of my time, and it wouldn't be fair to the person
gotcha.
For me to do that. However, I always, always, always open my inbox to anybody that has a writing question. If there's something that I can do to help you, and if I don't have the answer, I have a whole network of people. I can find the answer for you. So there's no such thing as a stupid question. That is how we all grow. And if I can help anybody, feel free to shoot me a question to my email. It is contact@authorcassandramorgan.com. Catch me on social media. If there's something that I can do to help you with just like a one-off question, I'm happy to do that, but I don't have the time right now to take on new clients and walk them through my program right now.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I understand that for sure. But you did give a good segue. You gave your email address, and I'm going to invite you to tell folks where to find you online so they can check out your books. So, yeah, websites and social media, anything, handles, anything you want to share, go ahead.
So I write under two names. My young adult fantasy series is under my name, Cassandra Morgan, and then the Silver Fox Mysteries and the Clean Romance, Damsel in Social Distance, is written under C.P. Morgan. So I write under two names. You can find me on Facebook either as author Cassandra Morgan or author CP Morgan on either of those pages. And then my Instagram is Morgan_Cassandra, though most of what I post on Instagram is my cats and occasionally like a picture of me. So yeah, if you're more interested in my cats, then you probably want to follow the Instagram. And then of course, if you want to follow the adventures of Mighty Mouse the Cat, check out the group Fans of Mighty Mouse the Cat on Facebook as well.
Yes, most definitely.
Does Mighty Mouse, does Mighty Mouse have a maybe novella in the future, maybe that he's going to co-write?
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. The only issue with that is right now, mm-hmm. I can legally name my personal cat Mighty Mouse, but to try to use Mighty Mouse's name to publish something under, because I think Mighty Mouse is a trademarked character.
Yeah,
that I'd have to do research on that and possibly
but
see
the hashtag mouse tax.
Yeah,
may
mouse
not
tax.
Be. Yep.
Yeah, mouse tax probably isn't, but I don't know that I would be able to say like written by Mighty Mouse the cat.
Right.
That's true. Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
Sandy says, Disney, come at you.
They will, too. They are hardcore.
Yeah,
yeah, they will
yeah,
be on
they,
it.
Oh,
they
are.
That, buddy.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
little thing.
Yeah, we had to be careful about that for Imaginarium when it came to how we named our other VIP guests, which are we call Imaginators, but we were looking into it initially and had thought of Imagineers, and then we're like, oh, wait, you know, that was a Disney thing, Imagineers, and I was like, yeah,
right.
We'll get a letter within a week if we try that. So we went with Imaginators, which thankfully was safe.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know all about that. That's not fun. But, yeah, you get that stern attorney letter. But,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, but it has been just awesome visiting with you tonight, Cassandra. Great to hear your writing again. The Cat Writers is just fantastic, and your cat work is something to be commended and celebrated. I mean, that's something near and dear to our hearts. And I mean, yeah, it sounds like you're getting it back to full throttle. All systems go. I'm happy. This is awesome.
I'll sleep when I'm dead.
That's right. We will all sleep when we're dead. Amen. I probably won't rest then.
But I'll give you the final comment, Cassandra, and then Holly, you can wrap it up. But yeah, as far as I go, come check us out next week, Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, for another great guest like Cassandra Morgan. And this has been a fantastic show. Cassandra, final word, and Holly, take us out.
Have a meowvelous week, everyone.
Nice. Thank you for being a wonderful guest, Ms. Cassandra, and thank you for all the help that you give to Imaginarium and blood, sweat, and tears that you put into it and help us, you know, to help all these lovely creatives. And I want to invite everyone out there and that's listening and that will listen to the playback to join us next Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hopefully no more hurricanes. Hopefully everyone will be safe. You know, all of our listeners are safe. Sandy is right down there in the thick of it and still has power. I don't know how, but she does, and that's great. And I hope she keeps power, but we will keep checking on her, you know, throughout the night. And have a great week, and we will see you next week.